And that is exactly my type of company. I think that you bring in really good people who are eager to impress, and you let them at it. Micromanagement days are gone.
Hello and welcome to episode 24 of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast. I'm your host, Gary Fox. The Entrepreneur Experiment is a weekly business podcast going out every Thursday at 6 a.m. where I get a chance to sit down and chat to some of Ireland's most interesting entrepreneurs. This week, we sit down and chat to Gareth Flower, a serial entrepreneur. Gareth really has an interesting journey to share in such a very short space of time. He's had a massive amount of businesses and started two of Ireland's most successful companies despite his young age. He started Crust Bakery, and he's also now the founder of Park P&P, a company which I think is going to be absolutely massive as it moves to the States this year. It's a really engaging chat. He shares a huge amount of practical advice. Along with his story, he shares a huge amount of practical advice about planning and productivity and how he thinks as an entrepreneur. So for any entrepreneurs, this is going to be a hugely practical chat. There's a lot to be learned. Without further ado, here is Mr. Gareth Flower. Gareth, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So we met, I think, a year and a half ago.
Yeah,
I think it was. At a random dinner, but your name keeps cropping up. So I had to sit down and chat.
That's
to
good.
You in a good way. So what are you working on right now?
So right now I am full-time in Park P&P, and on a monthly basis I check in with my other company, Crust Bakery.
We'll start there. Two companies.
Yeah, it's two is a handful. I started Crust about 8 years ago now, and it all started as a dream to be my own boss. Crust Bakery started going out and selling pastries to coffee shops around Dublin, which was fun at the time. But then we realized that for every basket we sold, we made €3.
Every basket.
So we were baking in my apartment in Temple Bar, myself and my old co-founder Rob, and we started to realize that there was HSE regulations that we had to follow. And
so you were actually baking them?
Yeah, we were actually baking them.
And what were you making?
We were making little mini pastries with dark chocolate and raisin and strawberry, and we had another one, coconut, which was our best seller at the time. And at the time, we had realized that Ireland didn't really have good baked products. Then we had Cuisine de France was everywhere, as you know, and everything was plain. Plain white croissants, plain white baguettes, plain white ciabattas, plain. And we had realized that Rob was from Austria, and in Austria, they're the biggest bakery nation in the world.
Wow,
so
okay.
You go over there and you see all these different pastries of all different sizes, shapes, colors, flavors, and it was amazing. So we started trying to replicate that in my apartment in Temple Bar. So we grew quickly. We were working full time at the time, and on the weekends we were selling. So we had 30 coffee shops within 3 weeks buying the product.
Wow.
We were burning about half of it in the oven, and we quickly realized that we needed a commercial chef, a commercial baker. So we found a guy in Cork to start producing on a commercial scale. So we outsourced that quite quickly, which is a big learning for us. Early on, was outsourcing is a really good idea. And that allowed us to get out and sell more. And with that time, we were out selling more. We were out learning how to run a business. Everything from collecting cash to sales, to how to sell, to how to package, how to market, etc. So it's really early days for that. Then we actually realized that some of the best breads in the world come from Germany. And Germany and German breads weren't really prevalent in Ireland up until that time. It was very, very much so French and maybe some Italian ciabattas and paninis and things. But German breads and bakery wasn't really big in Ireland or even in the UK. So we approached the second largest bakery in the world, in Europe, and we said to them that we're the fastest growing bakery brand in Ireland, and in the UK and Ireland. And we were shocked to receive an email the week after from the sales director of this company saying he'll be in our office on the week after.
He'd be in your office?
In our office.
Did you have an office?
No, we didn't. We had my apartment in Temple Bar. And we were a two-man band, so we had to scramble and figure out what to do. And one of the things we realized, you know, the harsh truth is we're two young guys and they're a billion euro a year company. So I asked my dad to come along. Nice. For a bit of gray hair.
Yeah.
And I said, look, just sit around and pretend like you're the head of sales. And we hired a room in the Westbury.
Oh, very nice. Go to the top.
So we paid for his hotel room that night. We figured...
In the Westbury?
Yeah. Ooh. We figured that it would be a game. Our game plan would be to have him in walking distance of Temple Bar.
Okay.
And to show him a good Irish experience.
I can see where this is going, all right. Yeah.
Yeah. So he came over and we had a great time. And the next day he gave us exclusivity for UK and Ireland for 3 years.
Wow.
Which was an absolute game changer for the company.
And what did you want from him to supply you with what?
We wanted him... So they have over 250 products that we could choose from and sell...
Right.
To the UK and Ireland.
Wow.
And they would send shipments or lorries with frozen bread, frozen bakery.
Okay.
Frozen is actually the best way to transport baked goods, because it doesn't hold any preservatives, it doesn't hold any of that.
Right.
And bakery is very different to a lot of different things in that it all depends on the type of flour you use in the water, and it's very unique to how the product tastes. So... we knew we were onto a winner here, and we armed with our first few pallets of stock, we went out to Super Values around the country. Okay. First stop was Super Value in Longford, where I'm from.
Okay.
And I asked Roy Davis, the owner there, Roy, will you help us out? We're a startup company and we're looking to grow. Would you help us out and place an order? And Roy actually went and said, I'll take 7 cases. Okay. And that was the biggest order we've ever gotten. And 7 cases, if you think, was 4 baskets.
Okay.
And 4 baskets by 7. It was a fantastic, fantastic first sale. So on the way back to Dublin, we were a little cheeky. And we went into every Super Value on the way back to Dublin. There's 8 of them at the time. And of the 8, 7 of those Super Values placed an order for 7 cases as well.
Right.
Because we said that they're selling out down the road in Longford. Call Roy Davis in Longford. And
I never knew the individual supermarkets could order. I always thought it would have been central.
Well, they're told to order central, but they have a buffer.
Gotcha.
Where they're allowed to order from independent suppliers. And we fit that category quite nicely. And we're bringing something new that they hadn't seen before, so they were quite excited. And to be able to sell 49 cases in the first day of sales, which was, you know, over a pallet for us at the time, blew up the company. So we were, you know, it was a massive increase in almost tech-like multiplication. Mm. There in growth.
What products did you start with?
We started with breads, so we had sourdough before sourdough was cool.
Okay, yeah.
And we brought multigrain, but we brought like Gouda cheese bread, and we brought like, which was so good to taste. And all we had to do was put the Gouda cheese bread into the hands of the buyer, and smell and it was beautiful. And roast onion baguettes and ciabatta with chilies and cheese inside, and it was just. Absolutely, it was too easy. It was great. We sold all the way from Super Values all the way down to Dingle, Super Value in Dingle.
You were physically going to all these places,
driving around, yeah, with baskets of bread in our car, selling cases. So they'd order, and then we'd transport directly from our bakery in Swords So
you had taken it premises then to house and ship all these.
Yeah, exactly. And then we were trying to discover who we were as a brand.
Okay.
And that was a really important thing. We didn't have a brand name. Our company was Get Food Limited, you know.
And, that one took a while, that's it.
Yeah, it was hilarious. So we didn't know what we were, who we were, or what we were going to focus on. And we stumbled into bakery, and then we just wanted to do something different. So innovation was really at the core of what we wanted to do. Do something different, be different than the rest of the market. And what we started as a research was what was missing in the Irish market versus abroad. And we stumbled upon donuts. Donuts were never really a thing until we actually, you would have seen pockets of donut expertise here in Dublin. The Rolling Donut, for example, is a fantastic case study. They're a brilliant company, brilliant brand name. But they hadn't expanded outside. And if you look at Longford, for example, or Galway, you would see the same donut, sugar donut.
It's the cuisine de France, sugar ring donut, and then the jam donut, or the big plastic bag. That was it.
Yeah, that was it. And you would literally get diabetes straight off.
Because you always bought the bag as well.
Yeah. So we grew, we brought a range of donuts in that hadn't been seen before, like Ferrero Rocher donuts to Jungle Chocolate donuts to all these different types, and managed to sell these quite successfully across the country as well, which really scaled the company even further. And we thought what could be really cool here would be to define our brand with the Cronut. So I'd been to New York with my girlfriend, and we had seen these insane queues down the street for this bakery.
Remember this craze? It was phenomenal.
And it was started by a guy, Dominique Ansel, in Manhattan. And it was actually a secret fact that his head of a bakery, a woman called Rowley's, actually invented the Cronut, but he got all the credit because it was his bakery.
Okay.
But queues outside the door, all the way down the street, people queuing up from 5 a.m., mayhem. There was people paying people to stand in the queue, and there was a minimum of 2 Cronuts that you could order. A maximum of 2 Cronuts you could order. It was totally insane. So I said, we have to figure out how to bring this to Ireland. So we flew to Germany to meet some of the bakeries and the master bakers who have mastered their craft. And I said, guys, we need to make a Cronut.
Were these your current partners?
Current partners.
Okay, so you were, okay.
We then convinced one of the master bakers to give it a shot, and he created what we feel is the world's best Cronut. So we came back to Ireland, we started producing these, and we signed an initial rollout deal with Apple Greens. So Apple Greens launched the Cronut first in Ireland, and then we signed a deal with Butler's as well. So Butler's wanted a glazed Cronut then, which was delicious and still in all their stores today.
Right.
So, which is great for the airport, actually. You want your coffee and your Cronut on the run. Then the company scaled, and we created the brand name Crust. Crust was a good tie back to Rob's Austrian background, and the word resonated in English as well. So crust is the crust of the bread, but Kruste in German with an E. And we put the umlaut there because we read about subconscious branding, and Amazon have the tick for subconscious smile.
Okay.
And they had done all of these feedback forms where people had loved the brand after the tick was in place, and they found it's because it tricks your mind into thinking it's a smile.
Wow.
And so we put the umlaut there so it over the U, so it looks like a secret smile. And
oh, yeah,
we did a good job.
Go. I'm looking at the cup as we talk.
Yeah. So I think we did a good job on the brand. And one day my mom asked me, when are you going to get a job, Gareth?
What did you think you were doing?
At this stage, we were hiring, you know, 5 people. And she goes, when are you, like, you're running out of road here, you know? I was like 25.
25.
And I said to her, what do you mean? And she's, I just don't know what you do, you know? And
she's probably consuming your products all over the country.
But the thing was, we were selling own branded products to stores. So no one saw our brand. Right. We didn't have a brand really at the time. We were selling products. Like, anyone could have eaten our product and never know it was a crust product.
Gotcha.
And, you know, we've sold millions of food products at this stage, and many, you know, many people have enjoyed our product and would never know it's because of us. So part of that resonated with us, and that we weren't creating anything that was memorable or that would associate with what we've done. So we decided that coffee shops was a booming trend, and we looked into it and thought coffee shops were cool. We thought that, you know, we liked working from coffee shops ourselves. Maybe this is something we should get into. Bakery, coffee shop, I think it would be a really good fit.
When was this?
This was 2015. So we had made a decent amount of money at the time, and we decided to open a coffee shop. So we opened a trial coffee shop on Anger Street, which is only supposed to be an initial trial, where the Dublin Pizza Company is right now.
Oh, yeah.
So it's literally like two seats. You know, we went in, we designed it. We had our mini awning on the inside we thought would be cool. And we put out the products we thought would sell. And it was a success. We had queues of people out the door. We were surrounded by DIT College, DBS as well, and all of those, and RCSI. And those colleges came in, and they were, you know, myself and Rob were there handing out donuts and cronuts and coffee with a smile, giving the customer service of two young business owners.
It must have been nice to see people enjoying your product.
It was so cool. It was so cool. And I mean, you know, you look back and you think, oh, it's the money and the money is what you're after. But actually, the one thing that feels so much better is, I'll never forget it. It's like day one opening the store was the most stressful day of my life. Like, everyone thinks that's the best day. It's the worst day. But month one after, I was walking to the shop, and there was a girl standing outside, and she was on her phone, and she's saying, hey, I'm just down at Crust. Will I meet you here? with her coffee cup.
Become a thing.
And I just was like, that is so cool.
That must be nice.
You know, it was such a good buzz that we've created a place in someone's life. Like,
that's huge. Yeah,
yeah, it was really cool. And loads of moments like that since. But it was just brilliant. So we got caught up in the hype, and we went way overboard, and we signed up our second lease within the same 12 months as our first lease. But this was a 44-seater versus two. So it was way bigger and prime central, right on in front of the George on Georgia Street. Now, a lot of people think now they see Georgia Street prime real estate. But when we set up, there was 10 empty units on Georgia Street.
Really?
10 empty units. Now, since it's gone on to win Purple Flag International Awards and things like that for culture, and it's become a real hotspot. It
really is, that whole quarter there. So we're sitting right across from now in Temple Bar, but like, Georgia Street is huge. Like, the amount of people and tourism that goes by that street is awesome.
And I suppose I had known it was a great street because I had lived in Temple Bar and seen the potential. And We opened our doors, and it was a huge eye-opener. We had and still to this day, retail business is a really tough game. It's, you have competition, which is one part, but then you also have to follow massive regulation. So when you're a bigger store, you get away with things when you're a small store, but when you're a bigger store, everyone comes in looking to scrutinize what you're doing, which was tough at the start when we had no retail experience, really. We had no food experience, really. We were coming to grips with everything very fast. We had a team of 17 or 18 at the time. So trying to deal with all this all in one year and at the same time as running a wholesale business. And then we decided the year after to start catering as well, the catering business. So it was a lot to take on. We were doing 7 day weeks. Right. We were doing 20 hour days.
And I was going to ask you, how did you actually balance that? Just work.
It was a lot of work, and it was adrenaline. So the adrenaline was purely what was getting us through, and crust sandwiches and cronuts. Mm. But it was proper adrenaline, and that runs out. You know, it's great, but it runs out and it takes its toll. And myself and Rob burnt out. We had two stores in 3 years. We had two stores and a really successful wholesale business. And, you know, we were just ourselves. We overworked and it took a little bit of a toll. I know that we tried to relax, but you can't relax with so much going on. So we tried to focus on different things, which was, we were big technology enthusiasts. So I'd say we were one of the first people in Ireland to bring in one of those little two-wheeler, electric two-wheelers. You know, they're called airboards.
Yeah.
So I bought one for Rob for his birthday and we imported it. And I'll never forget the look on people's faces when he was flying by. Like, it was on broadsheet. You know the broadsheet?
This
knob.
They were massive.
Yeah.
One of the lads we had on a few weeks ago was talking about, he was trying to import them.
Yeah.
Like, for 6 months, they were all people could talk about.
Oh, because it was so unique and different. And I remember Rob, like, we were in the coffee shop and Rob would serve coffees on it. And, like, people were like, this is the future. And it was a really cool time. So we started getting into this whole technology buzz. Mm. And what else could we do, right? So we decided that we would, instead of having these clunky old tills, we get an iPad till.
Okay.
Right, which actually saved us a fortune, because those clunky tills cost fortune.
Really?
Yeah. Big tip is to go iPad if you're not looking to spend a fortune. It's super cheap. You can buy the iPad, then there's no recurring payments, and then you can download free till tools online through the App Store, and then you don't have any of these recurring.
That's a huge tip.
Yeah. So we did that, and then when we had the iPad, we thought it would be cool to allow people to pay with Bitcoin, right? We actually then got one of the central bank directors in one day for a sandwich. We started chatting to him. We said, do you have any Bitcoin? You want to pay with Bitcoin? And he was a guy called Peter Oakes, and he was one of the youngest, I think he's the youngest central bank director in Irish history, but could be wrong, but I think he is. He was having a sandwich with us, and we said all about this Bitcoin thing. He's like, that is very, very cool. And then he told his friend about it, who was also trying to do something in Bitcoin. They came in and we did a whole press release on it. And then the thing spiraled out, saying, like, some newspapers started saying we're like the world's first smart bakery. The World Bakery Magazine and European Bakery Magazines all wrote about crust being the world's first smart bakery.
So that wasn't a planned PR stunt. No. It just happened as a bit of a laugh.
Pure coincidence. And then, if you Google world's first smart bakery, you will come up. And we were on ARD, the biggest German TV station.
That's hilarious.
We were on, like, it was hilarious. And a really funny byproduct of this was we get a phone call from... initially it was an email and we didn't follow up, from this Chinese businessman, and he said that he's interested in this smart bakery concept. He has 100 locations in China, mainland China. Would we be interested in flying to Hong Kong and talking to him about rolling out the smart bakery concept? So myself and Rob couldn't believe it from the email, and then we get a phone call. So they fly us out to Hong Kong.
Oh, this happens.
Yeah.
Even better.
So this. So we're like, you know what, 25 or whatever, and 26 maybe at the time. And Rob, myself, like, are literally sitting in Central in Hong Kong which is like a really hip area, the financial district. And we're in this coffee shop that's like really, really cool, golden seats and everything. And in walks in the two Chinese businessmen. One guy is a translator and then his boss. And they sit down and we shake hands and we're all dressed in suits. And we're there for 7 days, right? And he's put us up for one night and the rest is up to us.
Okay.
So we sit down, we get over pleasantries. And the first thing the translator says is, so we'd like to know about the robots. And our faces just were like, what? And he goes, the robots, tell us about the robots. And we just said, sorry, we don't know what you mean. And the translator's face just dropped. So we tried to explain it, and then he started trying to explain it to his boss, and he just went so red, and his boss just jumped, got up, walked out, and like the translator said, thanks for coming, so sorry.
What?
Enjoy the rest of your time.
After how long?
After us getting flown to Hong Kong for first day one in the morning. We're in Hong Kong, so we get 7 days in Hong Kong. What do? So we absolutely lived it up. We moved straight from that fancy hotel he put us up to into a hostel. And
that's amazing. Yeah. What did he think? That you had this little robot bakery that they were making the cronuts and stuff?
I'm guessing that's what he thought, yeah. That we literally had robots making all of the products. which is actually seemed to be a thing that's taken off over there at the moment.
Really?
So maybe he was onto something.
Wow.
Because like all the robot coffee making there and things like that is getting much bigger. But yeah, funny story.
That
so we ended up in LKF in Hong Kong, partying it up, and had a great experience because of it. So we came back and we actually had made a couple of €1,000 in Bitcoin transactions. And this was back, 2015 or 2016.
I was going to ask you, did you take any Bitcoin?
Yeah, so we did. We got a couple of £1,000. Like, we had loads of people coming in paying with Bitcoin, and then all of a sudden it stopped for 6 months, right? So after 6 months, I was like, Rob, we haven't get any Bitcoin in 6 months. Like we have a couple of £1,000 worth of Bitcoin here. Like, what are we going to do with it? And so the two of us are like, geez, if no one's using it for 6 months, this thing's going to fall off a cliff, right? Which you'd think.
You would think, yeah.
So me and him had this bright idea to go to the UK and spend it all.
Oh, no.
So we went to the UK and spent all our cash on Bitcoin beers and pizzas
hotels
and everything.
Most expensive week of your life, probably.
Yeah, like $50,000 worth of pizza. You know? So, yeah, bit of a disaster. When you look back at how much it was worth, you know.
When it spiked at like, €20,000?
Yeah, you're looking at like a couple of €100,000, you know. Yeah, it's insane. But sure, look, you live and you learn.
You had a good time?
Yeah, we had a good time. And we, but then Rob and myself, we were burnt out. Like, so this was these are the good things. And then you burn out and then you kind of reflect at what you want in life and different things. And we parted ways. He moved to Portugal, left myself to run the business then. I got in another partner. And then I had this urge to set up something else, right? We had gone 4.5 years of doing that. And some entrepreneurs say that every 4 years you get your new itch.
Mm.
And it's like you've built something and you're like, you're the creator of a business.
Yeah.
You're not the guy who's supposed to be there for 50 years. You know, it's very rare that actually does happen. So
I can identify with that a lot. Yeah,
man.
I'm 4.5, 5 years in now, and I couldn't explain it.
You can't.
It's very interesting you said that, because like in the last year, I was like, oh, I just want to. There's just something I couldn't put into words. Like that's why I'm doing the podcast and doing the entrepreneur experiment. Just wanted that new thing. I think it's just inbuilt in entrepreneurs. There's a time you just want to do something new.
Yeah.
So you had crossed at this stage, and the wholesale business was still going.
Yeah.
And you started looking for something new.
Yeah. So I had this interesting time where there's about a year where myself and Rob were thinking of doing something else. He wasn't sure what he was going to do. I wasn't sure what I was going to do. We just knew we wanted something else. And I had an itch to do something on my own. So I went to, my girlfriend at the time, so, or well, she's my fiance now.
Okay, congrats.
Thank you.
That's important. My now wife pulls me up on this all the time when I say girlfriend, partner.
Yeah.
Because she said it again. It's very important.
It is important. It is important. They make you stronger. So at the time she was getting the bus in to see me, I was in the city centre and she was in Rathfarnham. And she said to me, I'm sick of getting the bus, Gareth, you know. You get the bus out to me. And I bloody hate the bus.
Yep.
With a passion. So I bought this car and I was driving. The first day with the car, I was driving through Ranelagh and with herself. And we were going out that night to meet some friends and... like literally driving through Ranelagh, I could not find parking anywhere. 25 minutes driving up and down this stretch of road beside Smith's Pub. And just
literally nothing there. Yeah.
Absolutely. Driving into estates, nothing, nothing, nothing. And then I started to see all of this open space in front of people's driveways. And I thought, you know what? I'm so frustrated. I'm going to pull in here and knock on this person's door. So I did. I knocked on the door and this lady came out and I was very frustrated. I said, listen, I'm so sorry to bother you, but I cannot find parking anywhere. Is there any chance I could just leave it here for a while? And she said, yeah, no problem. So I was a big fan of Airbnb. And that night I was a bit cheeky and I didn't come back to get the car. I left it overnight. Okay. And the next day I felt bad. I bought chocolates and 10 euros and came back and I said, I'm so sorry. Thanks so much for letting me use the space. And she goes, oh, not at all. Jesus, I should do this more often. And that's when it all clicked.
Okay.
I got back to the car and I said, jeez, babe, I think this is an absolute genius idea. Like, why don't people rent out their parking spaces? Mm-hmm. And you know when, like, I'm sure you have the same yourself. You get an idea every month, but then you like literally throw stones at it. Yeah. How will this fail?
Yeah,
how
you have to though. Yeah.
Yeah. So I did this and for about 3 or 4 weeks after, I started researching quite heavily then and started to see that competitors were starting to pop up different parts of the world doing exactly this. And I thought, God, I think this is a great business idea. So I went out catering one day. I was dropping off deliveries to Bank of Ireland and who've been a great supporter of Crust Bakery. Absolutely massive. They put me on all the ATMs. So for a month, I was the face of Bank of Ireland cash.
Oh, wow.
Which was great.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It was good fun. It was good fun. I was in Dingle for a lad's birthday and like, you know, you're all over the bank.
That's amazing.
It was so funny. But Bank of Ireland had been a massive support and they were buying catering off us. And at the time, there was a pitch event going on for this technology event. And the guys on stage were pitching their company, Jimmer. And I just remember looking at it and going, that technology looks really slick. But the business model looks rubbish.
Okay.
And like, so I went up to them after and said, guys, I have this business idea. I know you're doing your own thing, but would you be interested in hearing it out? And they did. And they came in to meet me in Crust Bakery and Dan, my co-founder, and he had three other guys working with him, developers. They were a team, right? So I met them all and I pitched the idea and they all loved it, decided to jump on board. We came up with the plan to do an MVP initially, build that in 30 days, which is pretty aggressive.
And they were all tech?
All tech, iOS, wow. Android, back end, front end, full stack. So
did they agree to scrap their own project or put on the back burner for 30 days and try this?
Back burner for 30 days.
Okay.
And
short
said,
time.
Yeah, I said, listen, I'm not going to waste your time. 30 days, if there's something here, we'll know if investors have an appetite. So I had very clear in my head that I wasn't going to start another small business. Right. Because I started a business that grew quite successfully, but organically. And if I'm going to leave that, I'm not going to set up the exact same thing.
Right.
So technology has the ability to scale. And that's why I was leaving a good traditional business to set up a technology company that could scale. So I had that very clear from day one. So I went out looking for investors with this MVP. Had a lot of research done as to why and when and the right timing and the economics of the business in my head. And then what we did was we raised a pre-revenue seed round of €500,000, split between Enterprise Ireland, who matched our $250,000 investment that we got from PowerScore Capital and private investors. So that
what stage were you at then, Gareth, at that stage?
Did you have a product?
Did you have an MVP?
Okay. We had an MVP and we had a really good business plan. We had a really good idea of how quickly it would grow.
That's a huge amount of money to raise, though, pre-revenue, especially in Ireland.
Yeah.
What was...
I don't know if it's been done before.
Oh. Put that in the show notes.
Yeah. Get the fact setters out.
What? How did that happen? Like, was that based on your track record with Crust? Was that based on, you know, a network you built up over years? How did you make that leap between the two?
Yeah, so it's a good question. Having Crust definitely helps. You know, they say that people who've done it before have an easier time raising money, and it's definitely true. You know, you've learned the hard lessons. You've learned a lot of hard lessons. And it just hardens you to the fact of business and how can you scale this. I was very clear in what we wanted to do. I had good people around me. Dan was an extremely impressive technology co-founder. We built a cool MVP, a really impressive team of developers. I mean, and the market was expanding quickly. So it all made sense. And the beauty, I think, as well, is the business idea is such a simple one that I meet people all the time and go, I actually had that business idea. You know,
that's the most frustrating thing ever. Say that to you.
You know, I invite them on board. You know, do you want to work for Airbnb? Yeah. I love it. And you know, it's super simple to get. Mm-hmm. Everybody, Airbnb is cloud.
Yeah.
They're the real innovators. You know, those guys really created markets. They created markets. And Airbnb is an opportunity to take advantage of one piece, which is people's driveways, hotel, car parks, car park operators. Everyone who has empty space, we can rent out. Mm-hmm. We scale quickly. We became the biggest in marketplace in Ireland. We had a competitor called Parking Motel, which has since merged into ourselves.
Okay.
So we're the biggest in Ireland. We scaled and we bought a company in Belgium called Share My Park. Then we then signed a license deal with the largest real estate company in the Netherlands called MVGM. And we raised a total of $1.5 million in the last 3 years. We have about 50,000 people regularly looking for parking. And we're working with every major car park operator in the country and in Belgium and the Netherlands. We also have signed up recently a partnership deal with MCD, the largest concert promoter. We just did the Slane concert with Metallica. There where we parked 20,000 people. So it's grown really well. Airbnb is a product that makes total sense to a lot of people, and we've made people a lot of money from using the service. I have one pub owner who called me when we were about a year in, and he said, "Gareth, I make more money from my parking spots now than I do my pub."
Wow.
You know, so
that's
pretty pretty impressive testimonial from a client. And it was cool. It was a really fun time. Like we were doing a lot of hard grafting and start knocking on doors.
I was going to ask you that to take me back to, so you got your MVP. How did you then get that onto people's phones, into people's minds?
Yeah, so the first thing to do in the MVP, my task was when the guys were building the product, was to sign up 300 people. So I had a target that I would sign 300 listers who would say that they would register their parking space before we go live.
That was your own personal target, was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was my development target. So I was saying, okay, well, raising money is basically like ticking all the boxes in terms of, do you have the team to do this? Do you have the product to do this? Do you have the processes in place to do this? Is your plan big enough? Is it ambitious enough? Is it achievable? What are the legal ramifications of this? What are the systems that you'll need 6 months down the line, a year down the line, 2 years down the line? What are, you know, all of these different things? What do your competitors look like? Will they eat you up? Would you eat them up? You know, would you... And all of this sort of comes into your plan.
And that's a phenomenal amount of work, even just everything you've listed there. How did you balance that with having another full-time job?
So I had left the business to Rob for that year.
Okay.
That year was pivotal. So I had said to Rob that he would run Crust, the CEO, and he did that. And then I suppose the time when he then decided to leave to Lisbon, I got a new partner on board who put some money in the business, and we decided to hire really good people who would manage the business without me.
Okay.
So that's actually been quite effective. We have, you know, it's 3.5 years on, and the business is grown now again to two cafes. We launched with Tesco's nationwide. In all their stores, you'll see Halo Donuts, which are crust donuts.
Okay.
We've taken on more customers, so have a really good team in there, and promoting entrepreneurship and intrapreneurship in the company as well is super important. I think I heard a quote the other day that I honestly will live by. It's hire hard and manage soft.
Okay.
Right. And that is exactly my type of company. I think that you bring in really good people who are eager to impress, and you let them at it. You know, I think that micromanagement days are gone.
You've hired wrong, I think, if you have to micromanage.
Exactly, exactly. And you realize that all your time is going into fixing problems or doing like shoddy work, and people think I can pay cheap and get excellence, and that just never works.
Yeah, it doesn't work in any fact of life.
Fun, dangerous fact where I learned this was in material. So I bought a load of office chairs, and I had celebrated the fact that I bought them for like £100. So I had like 10 office chairs and tables for like £100, right? And I remember being so proud. I was like, this is how you do business. And about 6 months later, we're all sitting in the office, and the chair I was on snapped, right? And literally, it was one of those ones where you see the padding on the top, padding on the bottom, and the steel in the middle.
Yeah.
And literally had snapped, landed on the ground, and the metal was sticking upwards. And I landed on it, and I got a 20-stitch scar on my back.
What?
Because it right beside my spine, because there was no give. I landed on it with the full force of my back and missed my spine. And the doctor was like, Garrett, no joke, that is a freak accident that you just avoided. Like, you would have been paralyzed for literally half an inch. And it was just a shock to me that...
That's terrifying.
You could be paralyzed because you bought a cheap bloody chair. You know? And that's just like...
It's a tough lesson.
A bit of my back was on the floor, you know? And it really is a strong point in that, like, you pay for what you get. And invest in quality, because it will do you better in the long run, where you can, right? And within reason. But I think, like, you have to continue to look at that. And so in terms of hiring, I brought in some really good people, and Crust has done well, and it's allowed me the freedom to grow Park B&P into the largest marketplace in Ireland, and we're scaling in Belgium and the Netherlands. In November of this year, of last year, I got accepted into a program called Black Box. And Black Box is a program that was run by Fadi Bashara, this guy who's a Syrian refugee who created a very successful business in Silicon Valley. And he's when he sold the business, he created this basic non-for-profit that would allow you to bring together entrepreneurs from every other part of the world, 12 different entrepreneurs, one from each country, to Silicon Valley, introduce them to the game changers in Silicon Valley.
Okay.
And in doing that, they would become friends as we're all living in the one house.
Great idea, yeah.
And then his aim was that in future, these people potentially would become influencers.
Mm.
And if they were friends with people from all around the world, then they would help stop conflict in the future.
Oh, wow. That's a big mission.
Yeah, really
cool.
Great
idea.
So
how did you get on that, or how did you even hear about it?
So we applied and I went through 4 different interviews with different team members. And it was brilliant. I got to meet some incredible people, from the biggest investors in the world, Kleiner Perkins, to Adam Scheer, the founder of Siri. And just hearing their stories were amazing. It was actually so much information that it was hard to take in.
How long was that, a week?
2 weeks.
2 weeks, okay.
2 weeks living in, living right in San Francisco, which was in the heart of San Francisco, was very cool.
So how long are we in operation at this point?
So we were going about 3 years at that stage.
Okay.
Just under 3 years. And we were in a position where we were growing every month. We had growth. We had good annual growth. And we could see the future. But the problem was the market was growing externally quite fast. And we hadn't been able to achieve that Series A funding that we needed to grow. As a consumer play, you need cash. You need to grow. You need the big aspiration is to grow a global consumer company. And we were trying to convince Series A investors that we had the product and the company to take it there. And unfortunately, we fell a bit short of that.
Okay. For Series A, just for people who don't know what fundraising is, what is Series A fundraising?
So Series A fundraising is generally after your seed round investment, which is your initial first investment or first few investments, which are there to establish the product, establish the team and the journey, and to test and create the company. The Series A is generally around that you raise a larger amount of money to scale what you've built. So a lot of people reference it as fuel for the fire.
Okay.
So you've already built something, it's working, and you need more cash to grow it faster.
Okay. You'd raise quite a bit at this stage, 1.5?
1.5 million, yeah.
Okay, so you're talking millions rather than hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, we were looking at 5 million
right. raise. Okay.
And we couldn't convince Series A VCs to invest at that level. This was very frustrating because when you're looking at a company that's growing month on month and you feel you've done everything right.
Okay. Did you feel you were hitting your head on a glass ceiling? You'd done everything you could with the money you had?
I think that what we needed at that stage was money to grow into new markets.
Okay.
And we had been tactical in how we grew into new markets, but we didn't have the money to execute and hire more and more people in new markets to do that. So it was very frustrating, a very frustrating time. I went to San Francisco thinking, not sure how the future was going to look for Park BNP. Was it going to be sold? If we couldn't raise money, are we going to burn out,
okay,
etc.? How long would the rope last? Because essentially you could trim all the costs out of the business and it would be quite a profitable business. But in terms of your own aspirations, you know, the ambition here is to grow a big company.
Mm.
So I got to meet some incredible people over there and they asked me to refocus, to spend time and refocus in the first week. And on the second week, come back with what the new plan was. And
okay.
That was really cool. And in terms of when a week sounds like a short time, we were up at 7:30 and we were finishing at like 11, you know, and it was intense meetings all day, which was brilliant. And with some of the world's leading figures on this, and they really just broke down the business model and put it back together. And one of the things that came out of it was we have a really strong tech team who build really good product quickly. And one of the products we built was called Park Office, which we had created for a client who had asked us for it. So a client was a large company. They had 700 employees and 70 parking spaces. Right. So they had a lot of people who wanted parking, and they were very frustrated because when they would come into the office every day, they would see half of their car park, the 70 spaces, which were already a premium.
Okay.
Empty.
And they were asking you for this product. That's amazing.
They were asking us for this product. So we built that product and we were able to see usage in the car park go over 95%. So what the product essentially does is it's a software product that allows you as a person who has a parking space to release that space to the rest of the company when you're not using it. So these people who have a space, if they're out of the office at a meeting, out sick or out on holidays 20 or 30 days of the year, they could release that space. And what we find is the more and more companies we researched had this exact same problem. Inefficient car parks, office car parks, where 20 to 50% of the car park was totally empty all the time. So when you see this, it becomes a massive solution, or a massive problem, which we had a solution to, and we just didn't see it clearly. And what we started to see was the ticket size for a sale to a client like that is quite significant. And software, or SaaS products as they call it, software as a service, ticket sizes are high margin. Our marketplace product was low margin.
Okay.
So you might have been doing 1,000 transactions a day, but at 10%, you're only seeing a fraction of what you're actually generating. So whereas SaaS is literally the other way around, and you do one sale and it can literally turn your company into a profitable entity.
That's amazing. And that's recurring revenue as well, is it?
Yeah, it's recurring revenue. So
the magic bullet.
So I came back, I pitched this to investors on the last pitch day. And we were in front of 50 of the top VC houses, and some of them came up to me after and said, "Gareth, I listen to thousands of pitches every year and I've never heard of anything like that." Wow. So very interesting.
And that's in Silicon Valley as well, the home of what you would associate as innovation.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought, you know, there's something here. I need to go back, talk to our investors and say, look, we have this great product that's growing, but we have potentially an even bigger solution here that is right in front of our face. So I did that, and what I did in the next 3 months was I started to flesh out the product more. So sat down with the team, and we all came around the whiteboard and drew out where we think that product could go, and that went really well. And we started to draw things that we hadn't thought of before and come up with new ideas and how to solve different problems. We came up with a really innovative solution that we've since rolled out to large businesses, large medium-sized businesses. And in the last 6 months, we've managed to sign up large companies here in Ireland, some of which I can't name through NDAs. But for example, one of our clients I can name is a large publicly traded company called FactSet in Connecticut in America.
Okay.
And in, you know, from that scale, we're talking from the scale of small companies which have parking problems to large publicly traded companies. We're in talks with one tech company at the moment in Ireland, one of the biggest tech companies in the world. They say parking is one of their biggest issues globally.
Wow.
You know, and this is a tech company valued over 100 billion, you know, it's insane. And they have that problem. So we're in a really exciting stage where we're at right now, where we missed out. We missed out, let's say, in the wave of investment towards marketplace for Series A, because we were based in a smaller market. That's what we were told. So I'm actually moving to New York in September to expand the investor network there for this product, so that our Series A for this product and pivot will be where we want it to be.
Okay, so your focus now is shifting towards the States.
Yes, in expanding our investor network. However, as a SaaS product, we're actually picking up clients all over the world. Before this interview, I was actually talking to our head of sales, who's onboarding a company in Australia that builds submarines.
Incredible.
So
you've gone from banging your head against the brick wall, trying to get people to sign up, to people coming to you from all over the world.
In 6 months. So it's pretty exciting time for ourselves at the moment.
That's an incredible transition in such a quick space of time. And that's something I've thought about a lot, is taking time away from the business. Is that something you recommend as an entrepreneur, to step away? Often are you too busy, even busy, to actually get the clarity, and often the distance can help?
Yeah, I think it's one of the biggest things I've learned actually in the last 12 months. Last year was probably the best year of my life in terms of financial, personal goals and business goals. All of them aligned. I had a really brilliant year. I traveled a lot. Everything was great. But I wasn't confident in where we were going. I didn't have that clarity. Whereas in the last 12 months, especially with that black box program, I was able to take that 2 weeks to really plan, to learn how to plan, to sit back, to hear others talk to me about the business who had similar experience themselves. And I think it was just fantastic to be able to come back with that knowledge and then be able to work smart and not hard, which I'd done with Crust for so many years.
We all fall into that trap. What advice would you have for kind of entrepreneurs who are in that space, you know, 2, 3, 4 years in, it's going well, but they know there's more to it? Like, what would your advice be to help them reach that next stage like you guys have?
I would say to surround yourself with people who have succeeded in a space similar, or succeeded in growing something that you admire. Surround yourself with those people and do whatever it takes to surround yourself as much as possible, because you will learn, you will get nuggets from them, which will help your own journey. Like, there are many, many thousands and hundreds of thousands of people who have gone before you and learned those same struggles.
Yeah, we all have the same problems.
Yeah, and everybody, I think, well, I definitely did. I started with a big ego, thinking I knew it all, and then you go around and you learn, oh wow, I wish I had known that, or I wish I had listened to that person, maybe thought about it, maybe that 10 minutes more, or sat down at the start of the day every day and just thought about what I'm going to knock out today instead of just opening my emails, because you end up spending hours doing that, or etc. And your brain only has a limited capacity every day, and you have to be smart with how you use it, or else you will just spend your day in emails or doing accounts or doing etc. There's so many things that will take your time.
I have two final questions actually for you, and you've led on perfectly to the second last one. The last one is to recommend a book, so you can think about that for a couple of minutes. The second last one is, how do you plan? So you're extremely busy, clearly, from everything you're involved in. How do you plan, say, your quarter or your month or your week? How does that look like? Do you have systems in place, or what way does that go?
Yeah, so I'm getting better at it. I think that it's important to not listen to me and immediately think that's the best way possible, you know, which people tend to do straight away and do their own copy of it. I think it's important to research how people are continuously getting more effective with their time. I definitely research it a lot, and I'm a big fan of different tools online that help me do that. So for example, I'm always Google Calendar. I'm a big Google Calendar fan. Some people will freak out and say their Outlook, you know, whatever. I like Google, and I like linking everything to Google, and I'm a big fan of the calendar, minuting everything in my calendar. So from today, I'll probably write down two or three things I learned from this podcast in my calendar previous. So I can look back, if we talk in 2 months, I can look back and say, here are two or three things I took from that I remember.
So you'll do that daily?
So I'll do that daily. And then what I'll do is, and it's very private to me, I don't let anyone else see it. So it's really my thoughts on the week. And then I try and plan out, even if I do remedial tasks, like for 20 minutes, I'll discuss some solution to, or I'll spend an hour with a band brainstorming their future goals, little things that I do, right, in my spare time. I'll write that down. And it's just a good way for me to keep track in my own head. And it allows me to plan and say, okay, I boxed that off. I'm moving into my next task, which I need to go and do. So that's one thing I do. Two, I use Trello. It's a handy free tool to allow you to box off the lists of things that you have to do, but add attachments and different things like that, which I find are really easy. I use Xero for my accountancy, which is really a handy tool. We use monday.com for our
those pre-roll ads on YouTube
crazy. God, they're so addictive, but they caught me, and our developers use that, and it's a good way to keep on top of that. I kind of check into all of those, but for me, the main thing on top of everything to keep organized is I get up at 5 a.m. so every single morning, bar the odd weekends, I get up at 5 a.m. I go for a run, and the first thing I do is I plan out my day. So I write down a few things that I definitely want to achieve, and what I find is that they're the things that you have to achieve that day, right? Too many people get into the office and they write down the 50 things they have to do today, but you should write down the things that you're definitely going to do, or else you'll end up procrastinating that you've so much to do.
You always do the easy ones first as well. Yeah. They're not the most important.
And a lot of people, what they do, and I've done it myself, is if you have so much to do, you skim through so many of them and you won't do any of them really good. And that relates to your work and the type of person you are. And what you realize is you probably are a really talented, high quality individual who can do an excellent project or excellent email, but you don't, because you feel you're in so much of a hurry, you do a poor email, you do a poor project, a presentation, and you do a poor, and it accumulates, and then they just think that you're all over the place. So as if you focus and spend that extra bit of time daily to just focus and knock out those three or five things really well, the rest of that stuff can wait.
That's great advice. What book has made a big impact to you personally or professionally in the last couple of years?
Yeah, so this is actually linked to my last point, which it's a funny one, but the 5 a.m. Club.
Okay.
So the 5 a.m. Club was written by a guy called Robin Sharma, and they sold like 15 million copies worldwide. It's really a successful author. He has another book called The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari. But he talks about life and what you want to get from life, and how you should structure your days, because he feels that most people nowadays are wasting their life scrolling to their phone, and they're not thinking smart. And I think he's totally right. He says that now is the best time to be alive, and it's the one time where he thinks that it's easier than ever to be really successful, because so many of your competitors, colleagues are wasting their life scrolling up and down on Instagram or Facebook.
Yeah.
And he has basically done out what I love is he's done a diagram of this is what you do. And if you do it every day, you'll have incremental benefits which will affect your life. And I've done it and I do it. And like this morning I went for a run. I just feel great.
That feeling. You know, it's fantastic. When you work out first thing in the morning, you get up a little bit early. That feeling of momentum drives you through. I have a very similar pattern to yourself. That drives you through.
Yeah, man. And you just feel like you're doing better in yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and even little things, like he tells you to connect with family and things like that. You know, I do that more and you feel more as one, because too many people focus on one element of their life. It might be business success or health, fitness, etc. But they don't realize that there's other pillars you need, like social relationships or family relationships, or, you know, financial health as well, and things like that. You need to look after yourself in other aspects than just success at work.
Brilliant. You know? Gareth, thank you so much.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed that episode with Gareth. If you want to win a copy of the book Gareth mentioned, The 5 AM Club, this week it's a little bit different. You have to do a tiny bit more work, but I think the chances of winning are much greater. You need to just leave us a review on iTunes and send me a message on social media with the review screenshot. Once you do that, you're in with a chance of winning the book. Thank you, and I will chat to you next week, Thursday at 6 AM. See you then.